Today we look at this fascinating first reading. It's a powerful reading. It's evocative. It's one of the finest short stories that have ever been composed. It's contained just in these 19 short verses, and it evokes so much of our Lenten journey. For so much of this also, if we can just go to the click next slide. It's been captured in so many different works of art right across the centuries in all different schools of art. They've treated particularly of that moment when the angel of the Lord appears and says to Abraham, no, you don't have to go through with this. You don't have to actually sacrifice your son Isaac. But in the Jewish tradition, it's not actually called the sacrifice of Isaac. It's actually called something else. It's called the Akedah. It's called the Akedah Yitzhak, which means the... If you can just click next, I've lost control. The Akedah Yitzhak. So they focus, in fact, on the binding of Isaac. That's the moment that we'll see that seems to have been that captured the attention and the focus of the rabbis across the centuries. The lectionary today gives us an abbreviated version, so I want to go a little bit more detail of the actual unfolding of the story. So it begins very simply in Genesis 22, verse 1, with we're told that Abraham, after these things, God tested Abraham. So at least we're in on the secret. We know that this is a testing of Abraham, but Abraham doesn't know that. Abraham is this part of the story, and he has to make do with all of this as it unfolds. We're told that the voice of the Lord says to Abraham, Abraham, strange way for God to address Abraham, but there it was. Now, Abraham replies in the way that he always replies. It's kind of the characteristic of Abraham. He always says this Hebrew word, hineni. It's a beautiful word that's caught up in that the whole sense of who we are as a people, that response. We hear it also in Our Lady also at the moment of the Assumption. She replies in the same way, hineni. It's a beautiful reply. Then the Lord puts this request to Abraham. Take your son, your only son, Isaac, the son whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah. Now, it's a slightly strange way to give him this instruction. Take your son, fair enough. Which son, Lord? Your only son. Which son, Lord? Isaac? Ah, yeah. Which son, Lord? The son whom you love. Like, just it's this repetition. And we know in Hebrew that although there are the comparative and the superlative forms, what they normally use, if they want to emphasize something, they just keep repeating it. And so the Lord here repeats this, in a sense, four times. It's this instruction of who you are to take. Take your son, your only son, the son whom you love, Isaac. Now, sometimes the Bible is called the greatest love story ever told. And it's, you know, it's certainly a story of love. But we're in Genesis 22 here. So with all of the different stories that have already happened, the story of creation and the story of Adam and Eve giving birth to their children, the story of course, of Abraham and Sarah and on all of their initial journey, I mean, surely the word love must have been used many times already until this point in the scriptures. How many times do you think the word love has been used so far in the story until this moment in Genesis 22? Zero. This is the first time that the word love is actually used in the scriptures. And the rabbis are always kind of careful about that. They're always interested. When is the first time that a word is used, using the principle of first mention? They've always focused on that. And so love is only used here in this story at this moment. And as if They've been saving it up until this moment when it can be used. But then he's given further instructions. There you shall offer him as a burnt offering, as you do. Who is being offered? Take your son, your only son, the son whom you love, Isaac, and offer him as a burnt offering. Is anyone else any kind of alarm bells going off at this moment? You know, that maybe we should be calling child services, maybe we should be calling the police, maybe there's something should be happening. I mean, what on earth is happening at this point in the story? Why is God doing this? Why is God making this request of Abraham at this moment? But they set out. Abraham rose early the next morning and took two of his servants along with Isaac. He saddled his donkey, they cut the wood, and they set out. And then on the third day, he sees the place far away. So 3 days they have to journey like this. Two nights they build a campfire. They gather around and they start telling the stories. And Isaac is saying, you know how amazing this is. This is so good. We're going on this camping trip. We're going on this epic journey, this epic adventure. You know, I'll be able to tell all my friends at home how amazing it was just to have this, you know, quality time with Dad. There's no mention actually in the story of what Sarah thought of all of this, or in fact that whether she was consulted at all, whether she had any say in this matter. But this incredible thing of these 3 days of Abraham knows the way that this story is going to end, and Isaac at this stage still doesn't know. And then they arrive at the place. So Abraham takes the wood for the offering and laid it on his son Isaac. He himself carried the knife and the fire and the knife. So here's the wood. It's fairly heavy. I mean, that's clearly not enough wood that would be required. You would need even more wood than that. I took two trips to bring it across from the storeroom to lay it out here because I'm a bit of a wuss. But this suggests something of the age of Isaac. The story doesn't tell us. It just says, you know, sometime later, after these things, after the birth of Isaac, these things happen. So sometimes you see images of a young boy here. But the fact that he had to carry all of the wood that a donkey was until this point is carrying, and then he's the one who has to haul it up the final stage of the mountain, suggests that Isaac is old enough to be able to carry it, and he is the strong one. And meanwhile, here is, and I'm sure it was one of these, that all the way around. And there's the fire, and here's, of course, the knife. And the two of them walk on together. It's this kind of poignant moment in the story. This whole sense of they know, and Isaac, I'm sure, is beginning to get some sense of what's happening, the way that this story is going to unfold. And as they walk along, he calls out to his father, "Father." And how does Abraham reply? Of course, "Hineni." In this case, "Hineni Abeni." "Yes, here I am, my son." So Isaac's beginning to kind of twig that something is strange. He says, "Here is the fire, here is the wood, but the question is, where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" And it's kind of the question that will echo across the centuries. Where is the lamb for the burnt offering? And what does Abraham say? He says, "God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." And that phrase, that last thing of "my son," many of the saints across the centuries have kind of wondered, you know, did Abraham throw that in? That God will provide the lamb who happens to be my son, my only son, the son whom I loved. And then they arrive, the two of them walk on together. And this, the heaviness of all of this conversation is still finally there. And then they arrive at the place of the sacrifice. Now, with all of these props, I suspect that the next stage will be to get 2 volunteers to come and to help me to act out this situation. Maybe our confirmation lads want to... No one wants to be sacrificed? Come on up. Both of you, yeah. So you get to decide who's going to be Abraham and who's going to be Isaac. Who's good at tying ropes and knots? Well, here's some rope. There's a nice kind of hook. So if you want to tie up your... Well, you've got to tie him up. So Abraham built an altar and laid the wood on top. Okay, and let's just start doing some looping around so that he can't move too much. And then he bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar. So we've already established that Isaac is old enough, that Isaac is strong enough. He's the stronger of the two. And it seems to be this moment, the moment when Isaac is bound. Okay, now Isaac needs to lie on the stage in front of the... we won't get you to lie on the wood, but there he is. So he bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar. And then we're told that Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to kill his son. Do you want to see if this is this a sharp knife? So it's at this kind of moment when Abraham is there and the knife is poised and is ready, and you know he's about to kind of lunge. I don't know whether Isaac would have been wriggling quite as much, but he's about to plunge this knife into the throat of Isaac, when suddenly there's this voice, Abraham, Abraham, just to make sure that he hears it. And what does he say? Hineni. Let's all say that Hineni together. Hineni. Do not lay your hand on the boy, because I have seen now. We might put the sheath back on that knife. I have seen that you're prepared to do this. And that seems to be all that matters. That Abraham, you know, even to go to that extent of you know, having the knife in his hand, ready to slash the throat of his... And who is Isaac? His own son. His only son. The son whom you love. It's just, you know, such a poignant moment. I think we can put our hands together for Isaac and he can go back to... Now you've got to stay tied up, all mess. Abraham might untie you now. And then, of course, we're told that there was a ram that was found caught in the bushes. And so Abraham then does what he intended to do to Isaac. He now offers the ram as a sacrifice. Thank you. That's a very messy rope. Jeez. And so Abraham calls that place Moriah, for on the holy mountain the Lord provides. In some ways, I think we need to see this, you know, to see it acted out, to see how strange and bizarre the whole thing is, to see just the poignancy of that moment, the way that Isaac offers himself. He knows what his father intends. He doesn't know how the story could possibly have a happy ending. Neither does Abraham. Perhaps he hoped that God would be able to raise his son from the dead. Perhaps he imagined that, you know, that Isaac would come back to life. We don't know. What's strange is that verse 19 tells us that Abraham then returned to his young men. And that's the way that the story ends. Which is kind of a strange thing, because where is Isaac in that? There's actually no mention of Isaac. It's not the two of them walk on together, but Abraham alone returns to his young men. And many have wondered and pondered, you know, what does this mean? Why on earth isn't Isaac there at the end of the story? Has he just had enough? And he's just like, I just need some alone time. I just need to be by myself, away from this crazy knife-wielding, murdering kind of father that I have. I thought we were just going camping, and instead it's turned out to be this, you know, blood ritual kind of thing. And perhaps Isaac just needs some space to kind of deal with this. But the other question that is hanging is, Abraham said God himself will provide the lamb. But instead, God provides the ram. And so the question that has continued to echo across the centuries is, where is the lamb? And of course, the lamb becomes Jesus. It's why when John the Baptist points out to Jesus and says, behold, the Lamb of God, everyone finally gets it. Everyone finally understands the purpose of Jesus and the place of Jesus in our lives, that he is there as this sacrifice. He is there as the one who's offering himself so completely. Isaac was able to go home alive, but Jesus doesn't. Jesus faces the ultimate sacrifice on the cross, which is why this whole season of Lent is inviting us into this deeper reflection of who Jesus is and this offering that he makes. Let's indeed continue to be grateful and thankful for the gift of God present in our lives.